guest on the 20-yard end zone tonight is Milt Stegall. And Milt, thanks for coming on. And the first thing I want to ask is, how exciting was it to come back to Winnipeg for Milt Stegall night?
It was crazy. And it's not surprising. I mean, it's always overwhelming, but it's not surprising that they do that for me, because the way they treat me every single time in Winnipeg is truly amazing. But this was one of the best, because my wife and two sons were there, and they got to experience it firsthand, and they had a great time. And people were, it was a little shaky at the beginning because, of course, the weather, the 2.5-hour delay, and when the fact that we had that many people that stayed after that, like I said, I wasn't surprised, but I was overwhelmed. I wasn't surprised because I know how the fans are in Winnipeg, and the fact that they've been waiting for a Grey Cup for 25 years and they stuck around, I kind of figured they'd stick around for me. So it was a great evening, everything involved. The team went out and played great. So just that day from beginning to end was something special.
And there's a 2-hour delay for Lightning. And I'm watching that on TV, and I'm thinking, wow, Milt Stegall must be happy because they get to talk about him for 2 more hours during the delay. Is that kind of what happened, or did it get to be a little bit awkward?
It was a little awkward, but of course we got to talk more, and myself, Jack, and Rod, and Matt, and everyone involved. That's what we do. We like to talk. Of course, we wanted to get the game going, and I'm for sure both teams wanted to get the game going, but that's what we're there for, just in case there's some things like that. We're there to take up the time before the game starts. But even with that happening, everything worked out great. I have not one complaint about the way things went. And like you said, just gave me some more time to talk about myself, which I enjoy doing sometimes.
There was a lot of reflecting on your career. The fans talked about it. I know the media talked about it a lot. And I think I'm like everybody else. When I think of your career, I think of the famous last second 100-yard touchdown against Edmonton, where two DBs just were at a position and collided into each other and you were gone. And is that sort of the one moment you think back on? Is that, that's your epic moment in the CFL?
Only in the CFL was just my football career, period. And I started playing football when I was 4, played Little League, high school, college, NFL, a few years, and CFL. And that play right there is the one I remember. If anybody asks me, do you have one play you remember? And that comes up right away with no hesitation. There's nothing else that stands out like that play, because that's very rare that's going to happen the way it did with everything, with the previous drive, Kevin Glenn fumbling the ball on 3rd and 1, giving them the ball, they're going and scoring in the 2-point conversion. They're kicking off to us, and Jamie Stoddard gets a holding call, so we have to move the ball back to the 10. And then the way things just worked out was, I thought I was dreaming until I actually got hit in the end zone. So that play right there, like I said, is the most memorable play, not only in my CFL career, but of my football career.
Well, that's great, and it's such a memorable and emotional play, and it's fun to watch on YouTube all the time. And I know TSN keeps bringing up their greatest CFL plays, and that one, and Eddie Brown's catch where he kicked the ball up to himself. Like, there's a few that are always there, and that's a great one. Now, you grew up in Cincinnati, and you're a multi-sport star. You ran a sub-10.5 in the 100 meters. You go to Miami. How did you end up with the Bengals? And that must have been a thrill to be in your hometown playing for the Bengals. And what was that experience like?
It had its ups and downs, but it's crazy how it happened. Going into my senior year, I had a real good junior, and I was projected to be like that's when they had 12 rounds, projected to be like a mid-rounder, maybe between 5th and 7th round, but my senior year offensively didn't go as well as we would like it to. We really struggled offensively. So coming from a mid-major, if you're not putting up big numbers, you're not getting opportunities. But what happened was, there was a coach who was my offensive coordinator my sophomore year at Miami of Ohio. And at the time, he was the offensive coordinator for the Bengals. And he told the Bengals, you need to bring this guy in and give him a look. So I had a couple of teams who were interested in me as far as giving me a free agent look, but I went and worked out for the Bengals, and they basically told me, if we don't draft you like in the 11th or 12th round, you'll be our first free agent we want to sign. So I didn't get drafted as planned, and right after the draft, they called me right away and said, we want to offer your contract, and we want you to come sign it right now. So it was fortunate that, like I said, the gentleman I talked about, man, Dana Bible, he put in a good word for me, and I went in there, and I remember the first mini camp, I was nervous, I didn't know what, but, you know, I got comfortable, started doing some great things, had a great preseason, and made the team and was there for 3 years. So it's crazy how things work out. You know, people always say it's all about talent, and a lot of people have talent, but you just have to have a lot of things go your way, not only to play college, but even more so to play professionally. And I had a lot of things go my way, and a lot of people opened up some doors for me, and I just happened to take advantage of them.
I know when I was playing, I went to a few free agent camps at a college, and I was undrafted, and then I ended up doing the opposite of what most guys. I was a Canadian, went down to the States to play semi-pro just to stay in the game. But you see so many guys who are late round picks or free agents and stars in college and just don't quite make it. And you must have seen a lot of guys through the years, and you're always kind of thinking, especially the guys you might have played against in college, mates, and you think like, man, that guy was good enough. He just didn't get a break. Or there must be a lot of guys you saw through the years that were just not quite there, but so close.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I saw played with and against guys who I thought, who, you know, put up better numbers than me and looked better than me, just didn't get that shot. Just wasn't in the right place at the right time, or didn't go to the right school, or didn't have the right person behind them. And like I said before, it's more than talent. It takes a lot to make it on the highest level. You have to have, you know, everything falling in place. You have to make sure you're healthy at the right time. You may have ran a slow 40 that day when they thought you were going to run a faster 40, and they may have thought you were 6'3", and you're only 5'11", or 6'6". So there's a lot of things that have to be in place when you're trying to make it at that level. Like I said, it's not talent. You have to make sure you're in the right place at the right time, and I was fortunate enough where I was.
When you were in Winnipeg, were there a couple of guys that you ran into in the CFL and that made you think like, oh, my goodness, why is that guy up here?
Oh, man, there were plenty of guys. There were plenty of guys. Charles Roberts, he was one guy who was, and I understood the main reason why he was up there because of his size, but the guy had more heart than anybody I've ever been around. He had more talent than any just naturally gifted talent, where this guy could have been a scat back returner in the NFL. Another guy, Jerron Bolden, who was, he would go back and forth in between the NFL and CFL, but that was a guy who, if he would have had his head on straight, he would have been a Pro Bowl in the NFL every single year. The guy was 6'2", like 210 pounds, could run a 4.3 in the 40, could play cornerback, could play safety, physical, play bump and run, could do it all. But just, you know, a lot of guys have distractions that sometimes take them off their focus. But those two guys right there were two amazing players that I were fortunate. I had a fortunate opportunity to play with who I thought could have played at the highest level for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you ended up in Winnipeg, how did that all come down? And did you know anything about the CFL or even about Canada for that matter?
Well, first of all, I knew a little about the CFL. I just remember thinking when I was in high school watching games on ESPN at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, seeing Warren Moon or Flutie, whoever it may be. But I really didn't know that much about it. You know, I knew about Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, the main cities in Canada, but I had no idea. Didn't know too much about the CFL Canada. But the way things came about was I played 3 years with the Bengals, and then when I was a free agent, I ended up signing with Green Bay, and I got hurt in Green Bay, and then they released me, and no one called me in the NFL, so I thought my career was over with. But then my agent reaches out to me, letting me know that Winnipeg has your rights. I'm like, who has my rights? Winnipeg is the CFL, and if you want to continue playing, you know, they want you to come over there right now. So I was young at the time. I was 25, didn't have any responsibilities, you know, not married, not a serious girlfriend or any kids or anything like that. So I thought, hey, let me go up here and give it a shot, and maybe if I play well enough and put up some big numbers, I would get that opportunity to come back to the NFL. So I did get that opportunity. I got hurt once again, and I think there was a reason why I got hurt, because it was meant for me to be in the CFL and form and do all the great things I was able to do and experience all the great things and make all the friendships I was able to make in the CFL, and that's something you can't put a price tag on.
You must have been thrilled when you came up here and there's a position that doesn't even exist in the United States called slot back, and you get about a 5 or 10 yard run, and you know you're already one of the fastest guys in pro football as far as being a flat out straight sprinter. You must have thought you were in heaven after after you learned the systems and learned the offense up here.
Well, the key is, like you said, after I learned the position, because it's just not a natural thing. Basically for an American to be in that slot. It took me like a good year and a half to learn it, but after I learned it, it was crazy. Like when I first came up here, I was like, well, can I play the outside receivers? Like, well, no, we want to put you in the slot to utilize your shiftiness and your speed. And it took me a while to get used to it because it just wasn't natural. I remember the first two or three games I played and I was almost at a standstill trying to get used to the waggle, trying to get used to the quarterback's timing. But once you figure that out, once you figure out how you can basically run a DB back and forth before you even cross the line of scrimmage, it was something special. And it was something I used to smile every single time, especially when I saw a new DB who hadn't played in the CFL before. He was his first or second game lining up. That's when I would really, really utilize the waggle. So it's something special, but it's very rare that you find a guy who can step in there right away and take advantage of it. It takes some time. It takes some getting used to because we're used to being at a standstill.
They always say defense is easier to learn, but you would think that Americans coming up, the DBs must have it worse because their zone that they have to cover just goes on forever. You know, like their sideline would be like where the numbers are, and the zones are so big, and you've got guys with a running start. It must really be hard for some of those guys to adjust.
I always say in professional football, besides quarterback, playing at halfback in the CFL is the most difficult position in football. You think about, you have a guy running at you full speed, and even now it's even tougher with the new rules where you can't have any type of contact with the guy after 5 yards. You know, it's very difficult. So the best athletes in the CFL are playing that defense at halfback. You know, your cornerbacks are good, but that halfback has to be your best athlete because he has to cover a lot. He has to be able to run. He has to be somewhat physical, but the main thing, he has to be run. He has to be able to run. He has to be smart. So it takes a lot, you know, for guys to get used to that also. But once they do, they can do some good things in the CFL.
And again, we'll talk about halfbacks, not corners, but were there anybody that you just had a great rivalry with, somebody that challenged you, that brought out the best in you? Like we mentioned Malcolm Frank before. Think of some of the other, you know, Mark Washington was a great
yeah,
defensive player.
Do you remember guy Gerald Vaughn?
Yeah.
You know, remember Gerald Vaughn. He was tough. Because Gerald Vaughn was probably about 6'2", 210, 2 feet, but the guy was like, he was one of the fastest guys on the field. So he was not only physical, but he could run. So we used to have some epic battles. He won some, I think I won most of them, if I can remember correctly, but he was a tough cookie. He played most of his career. His best years was in Hamilton. Then the latter part of his career was in Ottawa. But when he was in Hamilton, he was one of the better DBs in the CFL.
Now, after you retired, you got a chance to be a part of the TSN panel, and that must be a great way for you to stay in the game.
Oh, yeah, it was a smooth transition. I played 17 years professionally, 14 CFL, 3 in NFL, and then the fact that I was able to go right into working on the panel. I mean, it's a way of staying around football without actually having to play football. So you're not going to get a better gig than that. I mean, every morning I wake up, I pinch myself and say, wow, this is what I really do for a living. I get to analyze football. I get to watch film. I get to talk to players, GMs, coaches, and watch football games for a living. So I'm truly fortunate. I'm truly blessed to have that opportunity. And the fact that I got to do it right after I retired football, that just made it even more special.
The one thing I noticed this year is you guys have so much fun. And you've always got the skits going on in the background. I think one game you had a big wig on, and then you were pretending
right,
to spray.
Right.
Like you always got something crazy going on in the background. Are you the brains behind that, or the writer, or do they give you that script, or do you guys just fool around?
Majority of the time, you have to think about, you know, those other guys, they're a little bit up in age. So I'm the younger guy on the panel, so I come up with some stuff. Every now and then, Matt he'll throw his ideas in there, but for the most part, it's me. And I mean, we're an entertainment business. We're paid to entertain. I mean, of course, people want to hear us talk about football, hear our opinion, hear what we think about what's going on. But at the end of the day, people want to be entertained, and that's what I always tell people. We get paid to entertain, to talk about football, but also entertain. So I just want to make sure we're doing our best to entertain the people who are paying their money to watch us entertain them.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and I mean, I watch the games with my kids, and they're always kind of can't wait to see what you guys are doing in the background. So it's fun. And I guess, you know, speaking of TSN, we have to just ask you about it because it happened last week. Henry Burris kind of has his famous rant. And
right.
What did you guys think of that? To me, I looked at, okay, there's a frustrated competitor that's just had enough and he's venting. Did you get that or did you kind of, were you kind of caught off guard or how did you react to that?
Well, we were definitely caught off guard. And since that, I've actually talked to him, like I said on there, Henry and I, we're friends and I talked to him and we had a chuckle and the good thing about that, it was good TV. It was good TV. Henry, what he said, I don't think the timing was right, but I love the passion. You know, most of the time when you interview a player, you're getting all the cliches. We need to come out and play harder. We need blah, blah, blah. But that was great TV by Henry, and no one was expecting it. So that's why we flipped up everything we were going to talk about, and we started talking about Henry. And, you know, a lot of times, and people may say, well, why did he say that? What is he thinking about? And sometimes you're just in the moment where you're going to say, man, I can't take it anymore. I'm in front of everybody. Everyone's going to be watching, and I have to let it out now. Like I said, it's not always the right time to do it, but sometimes you just can't control that emotion. And I think that's what happened to him. You know, some people may go back and some of his teammates like, dude, what were you thinking? I mean, it's good he came out in the second half and played well. Otherwise, people would really be on him. But the fact that he was still able to play well, that means a lot. But, you know, we had to do our part, too. We had to respond. We had to say what we thought. That's what we get paid to do. And it was a lot of interaction. Some people were for us. Some people were against us. But the main thing is people were tuned in. That's what we have to do. We have to get people to tune in. Now, I don't think anything – I don't think, but maybe it was something that was planned out. But at the end of the day, it was great TV on both sides.
Well, it certainly got everybody – in football in Canada talking, and it just brings up so much about quarterback controversies, and you see these great tandems. I mean, even in Calgary, Bo Levi Mitchell and Drew Tate may never see the field again, but he's a great quarterback.
It's crazy. Like, people are like, who is Drew Tate? Is he still playing? Because he hasn't been on the field in so long, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Milt, thank you again so much for joining us. And you know, it was congratulations on a great night, and we'll all look forward to seeing you on TSN.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Okay.